This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode every Thursday, and this week we're going to look at upcoming releases Machete Kills, Captain Phillips. We're going to have spoiler-free reviews of Zero Charisma, Rush, Don John, and Man of Tai Chi. The From the Outside In topic this week, series finales, which ones we love, we hate, and what we expect from them. After the normal episode concludes, we're gonna talk about the Breaking Bad finale. So don't worry. I know some people are sick of hearing about it. You won't hear anything about it until after the show is over. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and with me today are my fellow host, Scott Clark.
Heidi ho, neighbor.
Wow, that's a pullback. Brian Williams.
Morning.
Good morning.
Nice throwing us off.
And Justin McCumber.
Hello, Aaron. How are you today?
I am fabulous. How is everybody doing? It has been a while.
Fabulous.
It's been about a week.
Yeah, got some pushback that we were going to talk about Breaking Bad, and some people were like, oh, I'm so sick of hearing about it. Like,
those are the people that haven't watched it.
Yeah. So well, shut your holes.
Well, don't say that. If you're not into it, you're not into it. But that's we won't bring it up until the end, except for right now.
No, but I was out for somebody's birthday on Tuesday, and me and the guy were standing off completely away from the group talking about it. And somebody came up and said, what are you guys talking about? We're like, Breaking Bad. And their immediate response was, I'm so tired of reading about Breaking Bad on Facebook and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, someone that hasn't watched a single episode.
Hipster BS.
Well, and quite often this kind of mentality comes from people who they don't want to watch the show for the sole reason that so many other people like it. Mm-hmm. And if that's your reason for not watching it, then F off.
Unless it's so you think you can dance, because there's a reason I don't watch that. Yeah. Just filth.
I mean, if it's not your thing, that's great. That's fine. But if you're just, oh, everybody loves it, I'm tired of hearing about it, just shut up.
That was an excellent Valley Girl impression, Justin.
Thank you.
One that you sound like
even
without the attempt. So, podcast awards. Podcast awards. I said it a little wrong last week. The nomination,
what?
I did.
You made a mistake?
It happens from time to time. If you read my format, you would know, which you do. It happens every week.
You know I don't read that.
The Podcast Awards nomination process is you can only nominate one time. So if you go to podcastawards.com, you can fill in the shows that you want. Our category is Best Movies Film, so if you could nominate us there, that would be great. Just take 2 minutes out of your day. It'll take you literally a minute or two to fill out that form. Just go to podcastawards.com, go find Best Movies Film, put The Hollywood Outsider in our URL, and then click submit, and you're good. Unfortunately, last week I said you could nominate once a day, and apparently you can, when the voting process starts, then you can do that. But to nominate, you can only actually do it once.
Right.
So, The World of Warcraft is finally getting a release date, December 18th, 2015.
God damn.
Is anybody excited about this still? Because there's been a lot of people that are like, I'm excited, I'm not excited.
No.
No, I'm not really, I don't really care.
Not really.
Wow. That is kind of what I'm seeing on the internets.
I'm tired of Warcraft because everybody plays it.
Touche. But seriously, what is the backlash? Is it because it's past its prime and
I've never played it, and I know that it tends to go towards a general story, but isn't it kind of tailored towards the individual? My experience playing it should be, while probably, I don't know, 70% of the interactions and stuff is probably the same for, say, you, Scott, or you, Justin, but isn't it different enough for everybody? I'm assuming that it is different enough for everybody that it's kind of hard to make a movie with that.
Maybe they'll do something really cool where they'll have like four prints in a theater, and it'll be like a choose your own adventure. You move to a different theater, you go to theater number two if you think this. Number, you know, then it is
kind of... The hallways are full of people crisscrossing.
Now all I hear is jump, jump. Never mind. One quick thing before we get to movie news. AMC is actually starting a cool deal because our government decided to close this week. And I'm hoping by the time you listen to this that they've reopened. And I assume that they would be, but if not...
You assume they will work.
Yeah, I assume the government's going to work.
So AMC made what? So much money off of Breaking Bad, they're just giving free popcorn away?
AMC theaters, nothing
different. AMC.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
They're offering free popcorn to government employees. So for people in the military or work for the government that aren't currently being paid, they will get free popcorn when they go. So that's a kind of a cool little promo that they ran. Let's go to movie news. And I want to thank Tammy for this story. She's the one that actually sent it to us first. But J.J. Abrams has officially apologized for lens flares. Brian?
You know, I have fought this battle for so long. Finally, I can claim a victory here. We are changing the world of at least Hollywood, you know.
One rant at a time.
You know, I mean, our awesomeness knows no bounds at this point. So,
well, what I love about it is he's in a video and he's basically telling a reporter, you know, I realized it after my wife pointed it out. How the hell did you not realize it until your wife pointed it out?
I can't see what's going on in the scene.
Yeah. I mean, isn't one of the special effects guys going, you know, really, Mr. Abrams, you want to put 24 more flares in this picture? All right.
Well, I think it's the advantage to being married. I think your wife's going to tell you something that the guy that works for you is probably not going, oh, it looks great, Mr. JJ. Looks great. Let's do more of that.
Mr. JJ.
Mr. JJ.
They call
Mr.
Him JJ.
Oh, yeah. I think if he could go back to Lost, he'd probably add lens flares into that.
I think island. What's funny is he said in the video that he actually had to rely on ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, to like remove some of it. Mm-hmm. So there was more before the final product of that movie.
That's the one I want. I want the copy with extra flares.
It's just like glaring at you the whole time.
I'm just watching a white screen for 2 hours.
I'll tell you what. I'll come over. You plop in the Blu-ray. I'll stand in front of you and flash a flashlight right in your eyeball.
Or you can take some mag lights behind me and just shine them on the screen.
Oh, God. That was such a good video to watch, too. It really was. And I'll give him credit. He did have a sense of humor about it. So he appreciates that. All right, I got it. I'll lay off. Which means you won't have him in Star Wars as much, Justin, I don't think. So I apologize ahead if we ruined it for you.
Hey, I would have loved it either way.
You know, there's going to be at least one or two off a lightsaber here.
Well, yeah, the whole lightsaber is already a lens flare. Just think what he's going to do with that.
Whenever you see it, imagine JJ behind you giving you a wink.
And just think whenever the Millennium Falcon goes into hyperdrive.
Oh,
think,
no. Oh,
wow.
Oh, no.
I won't know where the hyperspace is and where it stops, where it begins. X-Men Days of Future Past writer Simon Kinberg. He's going to rewrite Josh Trank's Fantastic Four reboot. Now, why this news is actually interesting is because if Fox doesn't start production on the film by 2015, just like Daredevil, the rights are going to revert back to Marvel.
Well, you know, he's actually about the fifth person to come on and write this film. The first one, Jeremy Slater penned the script, and then they brought in Seth Graham Smith, who wrote the novel and the adaptation for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, to do their jobs. But there's also been Michael Green and T.S. Nolan, who've also worked on versions of the script. But Kinberg, whose resume includes Mr. and Mrs. Smith and the first Sherlock Holmes film, he's also going to serve as producer as well as screenwriter on this. So am I worried? Is this too many cooks in the kitchen? I kind of am. But then again, my expectation for a Fantastic Four movie was already so low that this really doesn't lower the bar by any appreciable amount.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it lowers it. What it does is concern me that they're not actually going to get the movie made, or that they're, I don't know.
Why are you worried that they won't get it made?
Because I actually want to see Josh Trank's version. I really want to see Matthew Vaughn producing it. I want to see Josh Trank directing it. I want to see that movie.
Wouldn't you rather, though, see Fantastic Four go back to Marvel and then let them do it? There's nothing saying that Josh Trank couldn't come aboard at that point, too. I guess I would rather see Marvel get it than Fox fuck it up yet again.
Yeah, I would love to see Marvel get it and then work them back, you know, work them into this already exploding Marvel universe. So
exactly, yeah.
They're not going to give up the rights to that. I think there's too much family movie potential.
No, but I'm just saying that's my wish. So that's why if they didn't make the film in time, I'm not worried.
Yeah, it's not like they have to be completed with the film as long as they apparently start production. Mm-hmm. So that should be attainable by the end of 2015.
Yeah. Just roll out a camera and a little clacker bar, you know?
Yeah, Jessica Alba is available, I'm sure.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Either way, it can't get much worse, can it?
No.
I actually thought the first one wasn't that bad.
It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great.
It gets a lot of bad flack. I thought it was a fun, simple
little
movie.
Is that what we should put on the poster? It wasn't that bad.
Hey, I thought the same thing about the first X-Men. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh God. The first X-Men shits from a great height on the first Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, I liked the first X-Men movie.
Oh, well, that's cool. I'll just negate my opinion then.
There you go. See how easy that was?
It's only taken 2.5 years. Finally, you're learning.
All right. Now, something that's a little bit closer to my heart, Fantastic Four is definitely not. Paramount is looking for ways to reimagine the Friday the 13th series. And one of the pitches that is gaining a lot of traction, I mean, it's all over the place, is that they want to make a found footage flick. Now, this isn't a done deal by any means, but it's a strong possibility at this point because they see a lot of cash from Paranormal Activity and those things. Do you want to see this, Scotty?
I do, man. I don't see why not. Again, but I didn't grow up on these movies, the original. I didn't get into slasher movies as a kid, that kind of thing.
Well, no, they were evil.
Well, yeah.
They still are.
But I think this idea is better.
I think he wasn't killing for Jesus.
I think this is better than just another reboot like they did with Nightmare on Elm Street. Although it was a cool casting, whatever, but just retelling the story, doing it this way is something fresh. The only problem that I see is that people like us already know what Jason looks like. Part of the appeal of a found footage movie is the unseen, which you're not seeing in your face. So those of us that already know what he looks like and what that character is all about, it's not going to resonate as well. But there's a whole audience of people that didn't grow up with that movie, and haven't experienced that kind of slasher film. Not all movies are made for us. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I actually like the idea.
I think you could not wear the mask and see if you could blend in with the crowd.
Just go to like
monster face. That's Jason's whole thing, though, was the mask and the machete.
I was joking. Yeah.
Oh. But do you think he'll start wearing the new style of goalie masks that are those huge oblong alien head shaped things?
And have like different paintings on them, like skulls and wolves and stuff like that?
Maybe like Friday the 13th painted into the side and a lot of machetes going down it.
Camp Crystal Lake sign on the back of it.
Damn right. Wearing a jersey and shit.
I don't like injecting fads into my franchises. It's one of those things where that'd be great if you want to do a slasher found footage flick and come up with a new concept to do it. That's great. Don't take something that's really near and dear to my heart and now you're going to try and experiment with it. I just don't want to. Especially, it's going to be the 13th movie, which is a big touchstone for fans of the franchise.
But I think Scott definitely has a point. This film has been done the same way every single time they've made it, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. Why not?
I don't know if that's true because Jason went to space. I don't recall that.
Well, the same thing. But still, I mean, a traditionally styled film. Why not do something a little different? And I would also argue that found footage, I don't know if I'd call it a fad anymore, considering how long it's been around.
What was wrong with the last one? I liked it.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great reboot.
Yeah, I was fine with that. I mean, it was, like I said, it was kind of glossed up a little bit, kind of modernized. I was fine with it.
But doing more of that, wouldn't that just be kind of the same old thing at that point?
No. It's been successful for 12 fucking movies.
That's what got me in the theater. So the last thing I need is a hot chicks, you know, running around the woods with shaky cam. I'm going to throw up in my popcorn if I have to watch 2 hours of somebody running through the woods, leaning up against a tree, and you know, getting killed from their perspective.
Here's what I don't understand, though. You guys,
the shaky cam stuff. I see that being a huge problem.
Well, yeah, I'm. You guys know me. I'm the first one to rally against shaky cam. But like the found footage, like the Paranormal Activity movies, they do that much better.
It makes sense. It doesn't make sense for a Friday the 13th. Everybody's going to be carrying cameras around the woods. That's just stupid.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's you're at a camp where basically all electronics are null and void at this point.
And I want the mood, I want the atmosphere, I want the music. I don't want to see but a found footage.
That's my point, is you guys are okay with that formula, with a horror slasher flick that's been the same for 12 movies, but you have the same complaint about like a romantic comedy that has the same formula every time, and you hate those because they don't do anything different. But with these
that movies, that is the staple for this franchise, is exactly what kind of movie they are.
Stop bringing your facts into this, Scott.
We don't have time for that shit.
There's no place for it here.
Put it this way, I would be game for a novel concept in terms of the story that they're telling, not necessarily in how they shoot it. I just personally found footage to me is a fad for me because it's already exhausted. I don't see a whole lot of fresh takes on it, and I don't really think they're going to inject a whole lot of originality into this one. Just give me what I want, and it's the 13th freaking movie.
Give
I want
what
it to
want.
Yeah, what I really, really,
what you
want.
Really, really want.
Tell us what you want, what you really, really want.
That's what I want. So
ziggy, ziggy, ah.
We'll see what happens. Hadfield and McCoy's and Waterworld director Kevin Reynolds is making a film that takes place after Jesus' resurrection. And why this is interesting, not you, Scott, we're not going to talk to you. You got Jesus issues. why it's interesting is he mentions it will be gladiator-like in tone with a mystery bent. I don't even know what that means, Brian.
Well, I kind of like this idea personally because it's really takes place in a time period that there's really, I don't know if there's even been any movies that have taken place in this era. You know, usually if anything, let's just say to do with Jesus, it's, you know, whatever, he dies, he rises, movie's over. But spoiler after that, alert. You don't really have anything until maybe the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
So it's really a kind of a time period where there's nothing really been done. And the way I'm looking at the way I kind of understand it is it's basically a detective movie just with sandals.
Yeah.
A detective movie?
For real. Yeah. That's,
I mean, it follows Pontius Pilate says, hey, I hear there's a, you know, I don't know, the way they made it sound, it was like this was an unknown guy that was that has risen from the dead. So he tasks his guy to go find out what it's about. So he does an investigation. He, you know, he talks to the apostles, he talks to, you know, other witnesses and that kind of stuff. And his agnostic beliefs that he had originally, he begins to question them.
Mm.
So, and apparently it's got something to do with the beginnings of Easter and how that got started. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that gets tied in, but
like eggs appear,
you know,
no, probably maybe. How the celebration
is this MCI Jerusalem or something.
CSI.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
MCI.
Maybe, yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe they'll step outside the box and do it, you know, with found footage.
Maybe.
A series of clay tablet drawings.
Just in very rapid animations.
And then randomly at some part, you'll see Jesus with a close-up and he'll take his sunglasses off.
Yeah!
I'm just curious what the gladiator in tone. I mean, they make it seem like it's not going to be a religious movie, but it's a religious movie, so.
Well, I think the point is that this was pretty violent times in history. This wasn't, you know, what we have today in modern society. There was
It's not glossy Charlton Heston, you know, Bible movie.
Right.
Mm-mm. No. And with Kevin Reynolds directing it, you know, Kevin Costner's going to pop up doing a bad Jewish accent or something. I'm not looking forward to that.
They do have some history.
They do.
Hatfield, McCoy's Waterworld, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Which I actually like. That's one movie I like.
That movie.
I do too. Doesn't hold up very well, but I like it.
If you can get past the shitty accents, it's all right.
And the mullet.
All right.
And Brian Adams.
I love Brian Adams.
Everybody's
going to jump on your back right now. Everything he did the love.
For her. That's right.
This is a bit of surprising news, but the C.S. Lewis Company has struck a deal. Justin, stop singing.
I can't help, bro.
They struck a deal to co-finance a fourth Chronicles of Narnia film. It's surprising because the last movie didn't do very well.
Well, it is surprising. It seems like every time they do a new one of these movies, everybody's immediate reaction is, really? They're going to do a new one? Because the first one came out, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I have to say, as a child, was one of my favorite books. In fact, I think it was the first fantasy novel I ever read. It got me into the whole D&D and the devil worshiping that I did.
Because this movie, awesome.
They spent $180 million to make the film. And nationally, they made $292 million back, which is not even twice the amount. But overseas, it made $453 million.
Mm-hmm, it's huge.
So that was pretty good money. And the second one, they actually spent $225 million to make. But what I didn't know until I researched this article, and yes, once again, I had to break out my calculator. The films have cost in total to make, the three of them, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, and the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, $560 million. Total worldwide take is $1,580 million.
That's why.
Mm-hmm. So these movies make money, especially overseas. So it's now, instead of people saying, really? They should be going, they waited this long?
No. But you should look a little closer to those figures, because half of that total, actually over half of that total, came from the first movie. The second movie made about...
Sure. But the third film
didn't do
cost
well.
Less to make, or cost $155 million. It made $104 million domestically, but it made $311 million overseas, which is more than the second film made.
Fair enough. Good point.
So, you can't see it, but I'm doing a Z-snap. loses some impact.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I'm not a fan of the films. I didn't like the first one that much. I didn't really care for the second one either, so I avoided the third one entirely. I'm kind of wondering if it's maybe not one of those instances of where I should give it another try. I've had my issues with C.S. Lewis, given his personal history and what he's written, and trying to reconcile my feelings with them both. Perhaps I should try to work harder to put those aside and just view the film as a film and come back to it. But it's definitely a film made for kids, and I hope what they put out is of great quality, and it makes a lot of kids and their families happy.
I'm really surprised that you like those books as much as you do, because growing up, those were books that were rallied in my circles as like the greatest books ever.
I think that's what he just said.
What I mean. As a child... Right. The Christianity aspect of both Lewis and his novels, I didn't even know about, and it didn't filter into my reading of them. It wasn't until later when I'd moved on to Tolkien and Tracy Hickman and other fantasy authors that I started to learn more about C.S. Lewis and his beliefs and how they filtered into the books, which I was kind of like, really? I never saw that, but maybe I was just too young to see that.
See, I always just, to me personally, the stories were just okay to me. And I think that a lot of their popularity is because of their religious undertones.
I know as a kid, I loved The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Uh-huh. And The Voyage of the Dawn Treader was my childhood favorite book of all time. It was so good. And yet I missed the movie of it. I should check that out.
I just didn't like the movies.
I was pretty much entertained by the movies. I wouldn't say I love them, but to me they were entertaining. The last one... I think the overall I wouldn't score it very high, but the one character, the cousin who's a bit of a pain in the ass, and he's an annoying piece of shit, and but he's funny, so it's worth. I mean, you know, hey, it's worth checking it out just to give it a shot. But
well, and I also compared them far too much against what Peter Jackson did with Lord of the Rings as a film adaptation, and they're a very pale, weak comparison.
Right. And they were definitely trying to follow that footstep too.
Yeah,
yeah, I got to block it out too.
What is the next one? Is it Silverchair?
Yes, the Silverchair.
Mm-hmm. And also, we're going to take a quick moment for Tom Clancy, who passed away today. Don't really know all the details; they don't really matter. He still passed away. The author of The Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, etc. As well as tons of games, which I love, Splinter Cell. So, anything you guys want to say real quick?
Did he do the Modern Combat games? Were those Red Storm games?
He did Ghost Recon.
Ghost Recon, that's mm-hmm. right. I really, set about probably about 20 years ago, I was a massive Clancy fan. I mean, I read Red Storm Rising, which I think is still my favorite book of his, and it's completely non-Jack Ryan related. But the, you know, the Hunt for Red Octobers and the Patriot Games, Sum of All Fears, they were just so well written, and they really informed a lot of my early writing. It's a sad day. I really am sad to see him go.
Yeah. Hunt for Red October is one of those movies that I can watch over and over again, even to this day. So it's a bummer.
With the real Jack Ryan in it.
With the real Jack Ryan. I actually like Sum of All Fears, too. I'm in the minority on that one. But
you sure are. Yep.
Ooh.
I like that movie.
That's right. That movie does exist, doesn't it?
Yeah. Affleck.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. First up is Frozen. Opens November 27th. Anna lives in a little place called Arendelle, which is a nice and warm place. But when her sister's powers get out of control, the land becomes this Antarctic ish realm that on and of course only Anna can save the land from being permanently frozen. Scotty loves cute little funny snowmen a lot, so I know you're dying to see this one, right?
No, not really. It looks cute. I think the one little character that's like the comic relief throughout looks kind of funny, but not enough to see it in a theater, not to piss off, is it Steven?
Steven.
That thinks you don't like any of the
animated films.
Animated films, but this one just looks like fodder to me. I don't know. Sorry, man. I'll watch on Blu-ray or something, but.
Steven, let me come to you and say, I think this looks fantastic. Watch the trailer. Really enjoyed it. I'm hoping that it will be as good as Tangled was, because I thought Tangled, you know, for being a non-Pixar Disney CGI animated film, was beautiful, so much fun. Frozen looks to be just as good. The lead voice actress is Kristen Bell, who I adore. Alan Tudyk's voice acting in it. It's got some really great people behind the mics, and the CGI looks marvelous. I, for one, really look forward to seeing this.
I do too. It reminds me of a nice throwback to the old Disney movies. So I really, those are the kinds that I like, that and Pixar. So I will give that one a shot.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys. At first, it just kind of like another cookie cutter animated movie, but by the end of it, it actually kind of won me over. And really, the star of this movie looks like it's going to be the snowman Olaf.
Mm-hmm. So honestly, Steven,
Scotty's the shitty one today.
Yeah, that's the one you want to be writing your email to right there, buddy. God,
why so negative?
Why do you hate things that are fun, Scott?
I don't know.
Jesus never let you watch animated movies either?
You guys are rubbing off on me, apparently.
Not sure what we've been watching for the past month or two, but the official main trailer for The Hobbit Desolation of Smaug is out, and we get to see lots of pretty elves, a little bit better look at Smaug, and of course, lots of action that is more fun than 12 dwarves in a barrel. So this is a must-see, no-brainer, of course. But Aaron, did you see anything that kind of made you a bit more excited?
Not really. I mean, it's the second trailer, and I think they give you a little bit better scope of what the story is going to be. And you do have a better understanding of what Smaug is going to look like. But really, it didn't get me any more excited. I already want to see it. I think the effects look great. The action looks great. Everything looks great. As long as it's not 14 hours long, I'm going to love it.
But we got to hear Smaug.
Yeah, that's what I was looking forward to.
Yeah, you do get to hear Benedict Cumberbatch's voice.
Heavily. You know, his voice has definitely been auto-tuned or whatever they've done with it. It's not his, you know.
You know where the hobbits are.
It looks fantastic.
Oh, just think if it would have been T-Pain. That would have been fantastic.
Bilbo, what are you doing in here?
I'm going to kill you. I will burn your shire.
I sure thought it was T-Pain. My precious.
I love when we make ourselves laugh.
Just a reminder, it does open December 13th later on this year.
Happy birthday, motherfuckers.
Yeah, his birthday.
Yeah, it's on the calendar.
Right.
Better be.
Mm-hmm. You can watch these trailers and, of course, those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you got anything you want to let us know about, got any questions, give us a shout-out on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Go to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Like us on there. Leave us some messages. Another place you can leave us a message at is you can call 818-81-I'm-A-Ho. That's 818-814-6246. And, of course, the traditional email at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And you can still get your I'm a Ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com also.
Stump the Ho.
Stump the Ho. Whenever we want to, one of our hosts posts a trivia question to the remaining hosts in an attempt to stump their fellow
whenever
hosts.
Whenever we feel like it.
As well as you listening. This week it's Justin's turn, so Justin, take it away.
All right, later on in this episode, we're going to be talking about David Goyer, who a lot of people will know as a comic book adaptation specialist in the movies. In January 6th, 1991, the draft of the screenplay for a particular genre film credits revisions to David Goyer, but he was not credited in the final cut of the film. Which of these genre films was it? A, Bram Stoker's Dracula. B, Death Becomes Her. And these all came out in 1992, by the way, when the film came out. C, Pet Sematary 2. D, Batman Returns.
I'll say Batman Returns.
All right, Scotty?
Pet Sematary 2.
Okay, Brian?
I'll go with Batman.
And the answer is Scotty is the victor, Pet Sematary 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think he should be complaining about that one.
No, I actually threw Batman Returns in there as kind of a curveball to see if that would stumble you.
Well, it did, you son of a bitch.
There you go. All right. So he's been riding for a while.
He's been around for quite some time. Now let's go to the big screen. We've got several movies, so we're going to try and get through them as quick as we can. Zero Charisma is the first one. That is one that should be hitting your video on demand October 8th, I believe. A lot of these independent movies are now doing that, and they're also doing a very steady nationwide release. But Zero Charisma revolves around Scott. He's an overbearing and boastful game master of a Dungeons & Dragons-esque table game who finds his role challenged when a cooler and easier-going new player arrives in the form of Miles. Scott begins to see his world around him crumble, his friends grow tired of Scott's little tirades, his mother returns after abandoning him in an attempt at his grandma's money, and he sees Miles as like the ultimate cause of his impending destruction is kind of how I think he sees it. So, now Scotty, you're a gamer, and all of us on the show probably have friends just like Scott and Miles, except maybe Brian, because he's the cool one. So what did you think of the story? Did it feel real to you, or was it a little too much fantasy?
There's a cool one of us?
Yeah, well...
Yeah, bitch!
Mm-hmm. No, I really enjoyed it. I watched the trailer, and I was really surprised by the actual product of the film from what the trailer portrayed. And
yeah, I didn't think the trailer did it much justice.
The trailer sucked.
It really didn't do it justice is the best good way to say it, because it went too long and it just kind of showed too much information. This movie kind of really shows you what geeks are like, and it shows them like we see TV shows like The Big Bang Theory, mm-hmm. and that kind of shows the stereotype a little bit, but it goes so over the top, and that it's just
a caricature.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a caricature instead of making them real people, and I think this movie really does a good job of showing nerds or geeks as people. I will say that I still think the message is a little skewed, in that if you're a geek or a nerd, you still fall into one of three categories. You're either completely overbearing and a bully, or you are a follower and you have no backbone, or you're a hipster douchebag.
I think those are the three categories in life, man, at this point.
I was kind of going to say the same thing, so good on you, Aaron.
Almost everybody I know is one of those three.
Sure.
There's a couple really good people that fall in the middle, but we don't acknowledge them.
But I enjoyed it. The story went some directions I wasn't expecting, and it was interesting. I was the biggest word I can say for this is surprised. I was really enjoying this movie, and it wasn't extraordinarily long, mm-hmm. but I felt into it the whole time.
What about you, Justin? Because you're a big D&D guy.
Yeah, I mean, there were some scenes in this that really almost could have been pulled from my own gaming experience, because I have sat around that kitchen table with a group of guys and just had nothing but our paper and dice and some miniatures in front of us and played hours and hours of these games. So it was definitely something that I could really just feel like came from my own existence. And I really liked it. I liked it quite a bit. The trailer, as y'all said, sucked. I mean, it made this film look like the worst sort of independent movie. Mm-hmm. And I was not looking forward to watching it. But once I did, I enjoyed it, not just because of the way it treated the characters, but also the way that it tried to show different sides. It was fair to geeks. You know, a lot of movies and TV shows are a little more cartoonish, you know, or, you know, they want to do a little geek blackface, as it were. Hey, Big Bang, what's going on? but it really showed a kind of truer look at what some of these guys are like. And the fact that the lead character was the way that he was, I'm so glad that it showed the deeper aspect of really who he was and didn't just hang everything on well, obviously he's just a closeted geek with no social skills. There was actually something more there, and I really liked it.
Let me ask you this, because I've really got no experience with RPG stuff, never played D&D or anything else. Do you, in your experience, have you seen many games masters, dungeon masters, whatever the term is, that are maybe a bit overbearing, controlling, almost bully? like a bully like this guy? Or,
well, I mean,
is it,
in my,
is it just an exaggerated maybe aspect of a person?
He was the bully.
Well, I might have been when I was dungeon mastering. I've been really fortunate that I've managed to get really good game masters, but I have played alongside people who were incredibly, you know, like role Nazis. If you tried to do anything that wasn't just right in line with what the book said, you know, they would throw a hissy fit and become quite the little tyrant. So, I, you know, that's as close as it comes, but still, there are times I think when all of us can be a little like that guy, but no, I never had a dungeon master that bad.
And I don't think it's limited to the tabletop gaming is definitely the catalyst, but I don't think it's the, it can be part of anything. It can be whatever somebody happens to be good at or what he thinks he's good at.
Anything, sports, ping pong.
It's basically the guy who's got, he's got nothing else he's good at in the world. But this, for whatever reason, he commands people's attention during this. This makes him feel like somebody. Finally, in his life, he feels like somebody. He doesn't feel like just the guy that delivers for the Donut Taco Palace, which, by the way, is a real place. I'm just saying. Donut, I got to go
there.
It's
kind of awesome.
It's kind of awesome. But what I liked most about the story is that they never really gave him, like you were kind of alluding to, Justin, they never really gave him an easy excuse. They showcase the relationship with his mom to explain why he is the way he is, but they never say, you know, it's okay. You know, I think they never really paint him to be a good guy at any point in the movie. And he never even gets that reprieve at the end where, oh, he's a saint all of a sudden. No, I mean, he's a dick.
And there's points where you think they're going to go that way. And then, nope.
No, they don't. He does something worse.
Yep.
Well, but, you know, you can't watch. I mean, when you watch this film, it has to be really apparent that this guy is, he's suffering from, whether it's bipolarism or something else. There is a mental issue at play in why he lashes out and reacts the way that he does. He's not just an asshole. There's a deeper thing going on with him that I think therapy and some medication could help him, become a better person.
I definitely think Justin was this guy. That's kind of what I'm getting.
It sounds like it. You sound.
Well, I'm very sensitive.
You sound like
to,
you're trying to get him taken care of here.
I'm sensitive to people with depression and other mental illnesses that others want to just look at as, oh, well, he's just that way. No, there are quite often medical issues at play that people don't see because you can't put a cast or a crutch under depression or bipolar issues.
And I do think they do a good job of explaining his character by not hammering you over the head with, with the
exactly.
mom. Now, in terms of acting, we're talking about a bunch of independent actors. So most of these guys you've never seen before. So the first one, Sam Eitzen, is the one that plays Scott, who's the main character. What did you think about him, Justin? Did he sell it for you?
Yeah, I mean, what they really could have done wrong is they could have tried to get somebody like a Seth Rogen type or a T.J. Miller type who can go that extreme but add just a little too much comedy to it. And for me, this guy didn't need that comedy element. He was very straightforward in who he was and how he was, and I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he didn't try and cover it up or prettify it with some jokes and shit.
I totally bought that he was an actual dungeon master or D&D gamer or whatever game tabletop game it was. There was not for a moment where I thought I can't say it, there never was a single moment, but I didn't watch his performance feel like this guy's acting. I'm just looking into this guy's life. I believe that in real life that actor does this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, because sometimes in these independent movies, maybe some poor acting really kind of takes you out of the moment and stuff. And I had no issues with that at all. Not
he
only him, but
dude.
With writing exactly. And I could feel his anger and, on some levels even sympathized with him, but it was, I thought he was a strong lead character. And, of course some of the other guys that really wasn't too large a parts, but even the James Franco looking,
Garrett Graham who plays Miles.
Yeah. Miles. Yeah. He was, he was pretty good too as a, just kind of a guy with a little bit of swag.
Little foil. Little Darth Vader for his, I don't even know
but
if he'd be
but
Luke.
He was also not too over-the-top bad guy, at least not for me. I mean, yeah, you could see he was kind of playing with them, but it never seemed over-the-top kind of
No,
bad.
I actually thought when I looked at Miles, I saw him much more as here's who you could be, Scott, if you would stop being such a douche.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you put a little bit more work into it and you stop being an ass to everybody in your regular daily life, I think this is the guy you could be.
Right.
The popular, you know, friendly. He's just not. He just doesn't have social skills, and he has a lot of personal anguish that keeps him from achieving those things. But you know who my favorite character was? Kendra. It was Katie Folger, because it was so refreshing to have like the gamer's girlfriend not portrayed as like embarrassed of her boyfriend, a bimbo, or an idiot.
Totally accepted it and embraced it and let him do his thing.
Because there are lots of girls out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
And even tried to make, you know, the geeky friends feel more welcome and stuff too. I thought that was a refreshing take.
I used to play in a group that had two girls playing D&D with the guys. They exist, people.
All right, guys. So what did you think overall? What was your final verdict? Justin?
I liked it quite a bit. I am thankful that none of my gaming friends were as big a fan of goth metal as the lead actor in this movie was, because that's some horrible shit. But I would probably, if I had to give it $1 out of $10, I'd give it a solid 7.5.
All right, Brian?
Yeah, some really, you know, entertaining characters, and basically, you know, in a story kind of giving me a glimpse into an area that I'm really not familiar with too much. I gave it a 6 out of 10, and that's a, I don't know, for me, that's a complimentary 6.
Scotty?
The biggest word I can say for this movie was surprised. I obviously am a geek myself. I've never played Dungeons & Dragons, but I was interested to see that perspective of it. And I felt like I kind of peeked into a door of that world, so to speak. And I liked, like I mentioned earlier, how the characters were portrayed as people and not just caricatures, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed in, like I said, the three camps. But overall, the movie was really entertaining from start to finish. If $10 is the full price of admission, I'd give it a solid 7.
All right. Well, I was taken by surprise at how honest Zero Charisma ends up being. The trailer, once again, does not do justice to it. So if you check that out, you might think, well, what are they talking about? But just trust us. Take a look at the movie. I think there's real characters I can relate to. I actually know guys just like this, so I can easily recommend it. If $10 is the full price of admission, this one's worth $7.50.
I want to mention one final thing, though. It's really quick. This movie did not wear out its welcome either. It was the perfect length.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't drag on at all for me.
No, it did not. Good pace to it. Thank God.
And I did get a quick interview, which I'm going to put up probably on Monday or something before with the filmmakers. It was real quick, and it was kind of on the fly, but I think it was pretty interesting. So I'll try to get the audio fixed on that, and we'll get that up. Rush, Brian, tell us about Rush.
Yeah, it's based on this bitter rivalry between 1970s Formula One drivers. One of them's from Britain, James Hunt. The other one's from Germany, Niki Lauda. And Rush basically portrays this yin yang relationship that these two guys have, where they've created this rivalry just very organically, but this rivalry really pushes each of them forward to be better, try to be better than the other one. Hemsworth plays James Hunt, and as a kind of life in the fast lane. Yes, the pun is intended. He takes more of an aggressive, just this really bombastic approach to racing, while Daniel Brühl, he plays Niki Lauda. His is a little bit more calculating, and he's a much more disciplined driver. The story is not so much just about fast cars, but really more about this relationship and these. I guess like a dichotomy of different approaches to trying to be great. What'd you think about it, Aaron?
I hate racing. First of all, I just want to make sure that's known. There has never been a racing movie that I enjoyed that wasn't, didn't have Vin Diesel in it. So I just don't like racing, but the movie really isn't about racing, like Brian said, but it is, but it's not, but it is.
I mean, it's much like Zero Charisma, where, yeah, it's about these RPG guys, but the main crux of the movie is that's just really just a backdrop to the main story.
It really is. And it was really interesting. I knew nothing about this history because I don't follow racing. To me, it's just a bunch of guys going zoom, zoom in a circle. Formula One, for how, if it's really exciting in real life, if it is or it isn't, I don't know, but it sure seems that way in the movie.
Main difference between Formula One and NASCAR is Formula One, they actually turn right.
Yeah, it seemed like there were some more curves. They really made the impacts feel like something. They showed kind of like – one thing I've never seen in a racing movie is I've never really seen the racers concerned about other racers. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It always seems like there's an accident, and then they're always worried about themselves getting back in the car. Where here, you know, I kind of – there was a couple scenes where there were accidents and other racers were in accidents, and the guys all run out there because they're worried about the other guys. To me, that was probably the most refreshing thing in the whole movie. And the fact that you've got these two guys that are going against each other – they kind of build a respect for each other, but they never really become friends, which I think people are going to think by watching the trailer. I really liked how the story did the movie. It's a very equal mix of action and story, and a really good job.
Yeah. And they did there's a thing that happens to to Brule's character, Niki Lauda, that is pretty traumatic. And it would have been easy to really make the focus more on that. Mm-hmm. You know, his accident and what happens to him because of this accident. But I liked how they really just kind of shortened that down. And I mean, just kind of really, it didn't last very long.
Yeah. And that's usually where a movie would just stop for about 25 minutes and why they explained all this stuff, and they didn't do it. They just kept moving.
Yeah.
When it comes to acting, Chris Hemsworth, honestly, next to Robert Downey Jr., probably the most charming actor working today. But in this movie, I think he showed he has acting chops. He shows rage. He goes through different stages because of the ups and downs of racing. He's got a lot of angst. He's got a lot of anger. He ruins his personal relationships and everything. And I haven't seen him play that. I mean, basically, he's just Thor in every movie that I've seen him in. So I think this is the movie that will get him a few juicier roles.
I would have to mostly disagree with you.
Really?
Yeah, because he's just Chris Hemsworth. To me, at this point in his career, I'm just resolved to the fact that he is that guy in every movie. He's that, and he does it well. He's a handsome son of a gun, and he's got some swag. But he's just Chris Hemsworth, and he's just that. He's that good-looking, charming guy. We did see a little bit more of a darker side of him with his anger and stuff. I thought he did portray that very well. Acting wise, the main guy for me was Daniel Brühl. I thought he was fantastic as Niki Lauda.
I would disagree with you. I saw Chris Hemsworth become a movie star in this movie. I'm one of those people where a movie star is somebody who, that's an actor where you're like, I want to go see a movie because that guy's in it. And Chris Hemsworth in this movie became that guy. He had like a Tom Cruise swagger. He had all cocksure attitude and everything else. He just won me over. Daniel Brühl, I thought, was good. He was really good. But his narration, I didn't like it at all.
Amazing.
What I wasn't a fan of in the narration was actually his delivery. Not necessarily the lines. I thought his delivery was cheesy. So that really took me out of it.
As far as the look and feel of this movie, what'd you think about it?
Just like I said earlier, I think they did a really nice job of intercutting the action and the story, and they kept it moving. It was a really good pace, huh? And it felt like it was just like the other movie. It was the right length. It didn't go too long. It didn't feel like I was dragging ever. When the accident happens, which is in the trailer, nobody's going to be surprised by this. When the accident happens, they kept moving, which I was so happy and grateful mm-hmm. for.
It kind of felt like I was watching it through an Instagram filter, you know, one of these iPhone apps where you doctor up your photographs. Because it was, of course, it is a period piece. So I know that's the reason and everything. But anyway, it just kind of felt, you know, like that. Some soft lenses and that kind of stuff. But what I actually really liked was there was like an extreme close-up of everything in this movie.
There was, yeah.
Engine pistons, helmet visors, tires, pavement. But to me, it really worked because it just kind of ramped up that intensity and just kind of gave this really good representation of how dangerous racing those F1 cars can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of score would you give it?
I thought the movie was a bit rushed toward the end, but it kept up a good pace.
We just can't help ourselves, can we?
You can't. The thing that impressed me the most is it's the first movie about racing I've ever enjoyed that didn't star Will Ferrell. So just for that, you get kudos. If $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $7.50. And I was shocked, absolutely shocked, because I did not think I would like it at all.
I will say you did go into it very, very begrudgingly.
Yeah, I did.
Did you just compare this to Ricky Bobby? I just want to...
No, I'm just saying that's the only other racing movie I've enjoyed. That's how boring I think racing is.
Yeah, I thought it was, for the most part, it's a real good drama. Fantastic job of really showing these opposing ways of approaching greatness. You know, he's got the one guy that's just balls to the wall crazy. He's all about having fun. He kind of wakes up with a hangover, jumps in the car and, you know, kicks ass. Where the other guy is, you know, goes to bed early. You know, he's faithful to his wife and stable family and all that stuff. He gets up, he studies, he tries to, you know, make the car better and all this other stuff and, you know, does just as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought it did a really good job of showing these, like I said earlier, the kind of yin yang effect of both of these guys that they had on each other. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
All right. Well, speaking of yin yang and
I was going to say that.
Sorry, buddy.
God damn it.
Let's go to Asian superstar Keanu Reeves. He has a new movie out called Man of Tai Chi. How was that, Justin?
Yeah, it's fucking good. It is really good. Now, this hits theaters in November 1st, but right now it's out on iTunes. I'm assuming it's available on other video on demands. I'm not sure, but it's definitely on iTunes. I already purchased a copy of it. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this film. And not only did Keanu Reeves direct it, but he also played the bad guy, which he hasn't done in a long time. Not since, what was that movie, The River?
The Gift.
Or The Gift. The Gift, yeah. So it's new, kind of, or not new, but unusual to see him play such a bad guy. And he plays a bad guy in this film. But the movie, it's really easy. It's just about a young martial artist who is a Tai Chi student, which is not a martial art, really. It's just about movement and the flow. Very slow, but he has turned Tai Chi into a martial art. It creates a rift between he and his master. And when he goes to compete as a Tai Chi fighter, he gets the attention of Keanu Reeves' character, who ushers him into the highly lucrative underworld fight club scene. And so most of the film is watching the lead actor, Tiger Chen, kick the shit out of a wide variety of opponents. This movie's 145 minutes. Just like what I said with Zero Charisma, there is no fat on this film, really. It moves along at a nice pace. The fight scenes are really well done because they're not this typical cut kind of bullshit that we've been getting lately. There are many nice, just static shots watching these guys wail on each other. Keanu Reeves shows an incredible adept eye at filming martial arts, which maybe after the Matrix films he learned, but he did a great job. And it's worth noting Tiger Chen, and that's also the name of the actor. He was one of the stuntmen who performed in The Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions, so I'm sure that's where they met. But it's filmed in Asia. It is produced in association with a lot of Chinese, the government and companies there. There's a handful of subtitles and some English. It's fantastic fighting, very well shot. I enjoyed every damn minute of it. If you like martial arts movies and you've kind of grown tired of the quick shot, quick cut, quick shot type of stuff they're doing, this might be a refreshing return to what you like. If I had to go 1 out of 10 on this one, it's getting a solid 8.5.
Wow.
I would go higher if there were just a few little things done, but as it is, it is really good. And I am hopeful that Keanu Reeves can continue this high bar of execution and maybe even get better, because he's good as it stands.
And now we're going to go to the wonderful world of porn with Don John. Scotty?
Yeah, I got a chance to see Don John this weekend. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the main character. John's pretty much a stereotypical Jersey Italian guy. He, as the trailer says, he loves his family, loves his place, loves his boys, and so on. But he's also obsessed with pornography. He explains how he watches so much porn that he actually prefers watching porn and masturbating to porn than actually having sex. But at the same time, he's also a total ladies man, not really interested in a real relationship until he meets Scarlett Johansson's character. And despite her being a quote-unquote dime, which is a perfect 10, he still sneaks in his porn habit and is eventually caught by her in the act. Drama ensues as he tries to convince her it's not a problem. She convinces him to take a night class to better his life. While he's at this class, he meets another character played by Julianne Moore, and the pair of them form an unlikely friendship as John starts to share his addiction problem with her, and she gives him advice how to get a grip on it.
I see what he did there.
What? That's basically the story in a nutshell, other than Scarlett Johansson's...
How did you get it again?
I really enjoyed the story up until the end because, in my mind, the character Scarlett Johansson loves actual movies of romantic comedies, that kind of thing, where Joseph mm-hmm. Gordon-Levitt's character prefers pornography. And he's basically land-blasting all these movies, but the movie kind of ends up in a romantic comedy fashion, so to speak. Basically, the movie that they're more or less making fun of. I would have liked a ballsier ending. There you go again.
Mm-hmm. And well, now you're trying too hard, though.
I actually had it written down, so no, but...
Oh, Aaron.
You're welcome.
Please don't throw that stone.
So the story was really interesting. Where I think this movie really shined the best was with the acting. I've been a big Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan for a while, but I loved his performance in this movie. I loved watching him from start to end. I felt like he really put his heart and soul into it. It was his material. He wrote it, directed it, that kind of thing. And you can tell he just owned it. Scarlett Johansson, I didn't doubt for a minute that she was who she played. I'm not just talking about looks, but her accent, her mannerisms. She really delivered the part for me. Tony Danza was great. I'm surprised at how much I enjoyed watching him. It's been too long since I've seen him in anything. I want to see him do some more of that kind of
roughly
stuff.
Roughly 1987.
Has he not done anything since then? Julianne Moore, did I swear she stopped aging 5 or 6 years ago. She doesn't look like she's getting any older to me. Like she's stuck at mid-30s or something like that. I liked her character and the back and forth between her and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It felt very genuine. And she had her own demons to deal with, and she totally sold me on that aspect of it. The production, not a whole lot of action in this movie. It was very a character-driven piece. But what I did like is there were a lot of quick cuts that were prevalent, and they were effective to drive home the mentality of the main character who had a desire for routine. There was a lot of repeated scenes, repeated shots, that kind of thing, over and over again to kind of show you how he's thinking and how he was physiologically wanting the same thing over and over again, and you throw in the girl that he really liked and his trying to stray away from the pornography as a real problem for him, just from shaking the routine. And that, to me, was like a lesson in psychology, so to speak. So as far as my final verdict, to me, this is one of the most honest films I've seen in quite a long time. I've told you before, I'm a sucker for movies where the main character talks to you directly and tells you what he's thinking. And I really got the impression of he almost sells you on like, okay, I get why you feel that way about this. I had a blast watching the journey and feeling exactly how the character felt. If $10 was the full price of admission, I would have given it an $8.
Nice.
I saw it too, but I'm not going to go into it because we're just running long on time as it is, but I didn't like it nearly as much as Scott, so I didn't want to poo-poo his whole review.
Shocker.
I thought it was really boring. It was repetitive. Basically, I will say this. If you watch the trailer and you like the trailer, you're probably going to like the movie. If you don't like the trailer, you're probably not going to like the movie. It's pretty much what that trailer is, which to me wasn't much. I thought he was fine. Scarlett Johansson was actually really good. She surprised me. But overall, it was just kind of boring, repetitive. I saw the whole movie coming about 6 miles away. I disagree, though. Julianne Moore, I think, looks like she's 55 like she is. She did not look spry in
well,
my
like,
eyes.
She looked 55 yeah, 20 years ago, though.
I
That's
my
yeah, I wouldn't say 30. You were like, she looks like she stopped in the 30s, but...
Maybe 1930.
Yeah.
If $10 is the full price, I'd give that one $5. I just thought it was okay. Parts of it were funny, but I didn't laugh. I didn't go, aw. It was
well,
just,
there goes that whole not wanting to poop on Scott's review thing.
Yeah, sorry, man. Well, I know you're looking forward to it, so of course you don't want to hear that. But box office.
Well, no, I'm going based off what you said.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is number one with $34 million. Prisoners, number two with $10.8 million for a $38 million total. Rush was number three with $10 million on a lot less theaters than Prisoners for $10.
People aren't rushing out to see it.
Baggage Claim, $9 million. And Don John opened to $8.6 million for fifth.
All right, fellas. Well, there are three films that we're going to be discussing this week, all opening on October 11th. The first one, A Glooming Peace This Morning With It Brings. The sun for sorrow will not show his head. Go hence to have more talk of these sad things. Some shall be pardoned and some punished. For never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo. I'm waiting for the applause to die down. Romeo and Juliet's opening to a limited release. This is the latest film to screen adaptation of William Shakespeare's play. It was adapted by Julian Fellowes, who actually created and writes Downton Abbey. And it's directed by Carlo Carlai. Stars Hayley Stanfield, Damian Lewis, whom some of you might know from Homeland, Stellan Skarsgård, Paul Giamatti, and Douglas Booth. I don't know if there's a person alive who doesn't know what Romeo and Juliet's about, so really I'm not going to go into the synopsis. Instead, I want to ask you guys a question. Mm-hmm. Has the Bard been adapted too much, or are you open to more modern artists taking their turn at it?
I think Romeo and Juliet has just, it's already been done to death.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like that, but that works. It's just, we get it. Almost every modern movie seems to be Romeo and Juliet. Anyway, I don't really think you need to run back to Shakespeare.
I would agree. I would like to see more Shakespeare works being made, but this is, you know, Romeo and Juliet's just been way, way overdone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty tired of the story as well. I've seen it so many times. But then I saw Paul Giamatti in the trailer, and that won me over a little bit. And then the trailer ended with the character or the actor that's playing Juliet reading part of the play, and it was just completely flat. It was there was no emotion in it, and that's pretty much how they ended the trailer. It felt totally weak to me. Justin's performance, you know, 2 minutes ago was far and above.
It's better than the trailer.
Than the trailer. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the story.
I can agree on the surface. I think Romeo and Juliet has been done a number of times. And when I originally went in to watch the trailer on this, I expected to just go, all right, yeah, it's just another take on Romeo and Juliet, nothing special. But there was something about the trailer that really did capture my attention and made me sit up a little more and pay attention to what they were doing. I don't know if it was the actors' performances or the way the camera and the screen looked. I don't know what it is, but there's something about it that I was like, I want to see this. This is an interesting, it's a different take on the story, but that it's so well done. I don't know if I've ever seen another adaptation of Romeo and Juliet that was done this beautifully.
Well, let us know.
I think
how
it looks amazingly good. So I came away with a lot higher impression of it than it sounds like you guys did.
Yeah, it's just kind of been there, done that for me.
All right. Well, the second one should maybe amp you up a little bit more. Machete Kills. This is the second Machete film directed by Robert Rodriguez and starring Danny Trejo. It also stars Sofia Vergara, Amber Heard, Mel Gibson, Lady Gaga, and Charlie Sheen. How Rodriguez got all those wackos to work, I don't know.
He's got pictures of a lot of people, man. That's all I can think about.
The U.S. government recruits Machete to battle his way through Mexico in order to bring down an arms dealer who looks to launch a weapon into space. Frankly, they had me at Machete, and I imagine they had you too, Scotty. You ready to kill or be killed?
Yeah, this movie looks like a lot of fun. It looks just as silly and over top as the last one, and I mean that in a good way. I will say that I'm more happy that the movie exists more than I want to see it. Does that make sense? Like, I like that they're still making movies like this.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm not, like, super amped to go see it. It's one I'll probably catch on DVD or something, although I did see the first one in the theater. But I'm just happy that they're still making movies like this, that have a sense of humor, that are very tongue-in-cheek and over-the-top with the violence and that kind of humor. The trailer makes me laugh. When he, like, throws a guy into a helicopter with a bungee cord or something, and it explodes in midair. Yes. I want to see that at some point.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Yes, I want to see it. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's ridiculous. That's really all you can say. It's ridiculous. It looks ridiculous, everything about it. How he got that cast, I want to know, because everybody should be making movies like this, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't know about everybody, but yeah, it's definitely looks like a lot of fun and just over the top. And again, those are all compliments. I can't wait to see it.
Just think about J.J. Abrams making Machete with lens flare. Think about
it. Yeah, just the glistening off of his machete.
Oh, yeah.
Oh man.
There you go.
The original was on FX a couple days ago, and I'm watching this going, why even bother putting this on FX? Like, all the reasons that you watch that movie are not in it.
It's kind of like watching Beverly Hills Cop on TV. There's no point.
Yeah. Why would they cut it on FX?
Well, you can only have – because when they send it out to television, I think they have like a pre-edited version.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think
they edit it for specific networks.
I mean, there's still intestines and that kind of thing, but
they have the intestines but not the swearing?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Well, that's American – our kind of censorship.
This is
Leave all the violence, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, our last film, Captain Phillips, is a dramatic action biopic. You don't hear that often. Directed by Paul Greengrass and based on the book, A Captain's Duty, Somali Pirates, Navy SEALs, and Dangerous Days at Sea by Captain Richard Phillips. The film tells the story of Captain Phillips and the 2009 hijacking by Somali pirates of the U.S.-flagged MV Maersk Alabama, the first American cargo ship to be hijacked in 200 years. Aaron and Paul, you both served in our watery armed forces.
Paul?
Aaron and Paul.
Aaron and Brian.
You going all Breaking Bad on us?
Yeah. Aaron, Paul, yeah, sorry. Aaron and Brian. Aaron, you served in the Navy, and Brian, you were in the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. So I imagine a film like this must spark your interest a little. Would I get an aye-aye skipper on that?
Aye-aye, yeah. Brian was probably more of a hero than I was, but Brian, are you?
Probably.
I really am. This is this does have some interest to me on a number of different levels, but with my Coast Guard experience being part of that, looks like a good. I mean, it's got Tom Hanks in it, so that's a good start right there. But it is a kind of a compelling story. I do know a little bit about it, but not too much. So, definitely want to give this one a shot.
I love the story. I remember it being on the news. I remember when it happened. It's one of those things. I love real life events if they're intriguing and there's a little bit more to it than just your usual, will he overcome? Because I kind of already know what happens with him. He's doing interviews, if that helps you.
He wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
therefore,
saying,
i.e.
he comes out okay. But yeah. It's really his story and how they come out of this that I think is really interesting, fantastic. Paul Greengrass did Bourne, like you said, the Bourne movies. And those are shot so well. Everything I've read about this is great. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see a pirate movie that doesn't have peg legs and eye patches. You know what I mean? Seriously, that sounds like I'm being funny, but that's what we think of when we think of pirate movies. This is a real-life event about – a lot of people don't think that pirates actually are out there today. You know, they think pirates is like a comical
Johnny
character
Depp,
piece
yeah.
or something. You know what I mean? Like Pirates of the Caribbean. And no, this stuff is actually going on, and I like seeing – a real life story about that happening, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, this stuff actually goes on just way more than people would even imagine.
Yeah, yep. quite often.
But you know, but because it happens around Africa and whatnot, you never hear about it.
Well, that's
because it's an American ship.
Because Brian and I do such a great job with our covert ops, you never hear about it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we let this guy get his story out, and we're done. That's it.
All right. Well, of these three films, Romeo and Juliet, Machete Kills, and Captain Phillips, which one are you guys most likely to go see? Brian?
Captain Phillips, not even close.
Scotty?
Same here, Captain Phillips.
Aaron?
Captain Phillips.
I'm going to go with Romeo and Juliet.
Mm.
The trailer intrigued me that much. Mm. I'm really curious to see it. I want to see Machete Kills. I have no interest in Captain Phillips, but those two movies were kind of neck and neck. But because I kind of know what I'm going to be getting with Machete Kills, I'm a little more interested in how this Romeo and Juliet may be different than others I've seen.
I bet you I know how it ends.
Yeah, I think I know how it ends, but I want to see how prettily it gets there.
All right. Well, you guys can always listen and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you listen there. Or through our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's a new episode every Thursday.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Tweet us or Facebook us the answer. And next week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was Justin's pick, and it was Bad Boys 2.
What?
Mm-hmm.
With one of the greatest clips ever.
It is. And honestly, if you listen to the whole thing, it's fantastic. So those that got it right, Marcus Shelton, Sean McGuire, P.G. Holyfield, John Butler, Linton Bowers, Stephen White, D.A. Cheney, and also Sandy Koki. And she also said, I debated between Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2 before settling on Bad Boys 2. Hopefully I picked the right one. You did. Nice job.
Yeah, I want to make sure. Did they all say Bad Boys 2? Because Bad Boys 1 don't count.
They did not. But we didn't specify when we listed it that they had to give the actual number. I think they all knew which one it was because, you know.
Did for Rush Hour.
Yeah, but we said that. We were very clear about that. Oh, okay. We weren't clear about it this time. Okay. So I don't think it would be fair. Because we didn't say specify which number. Well, this week it's Brian's turn. So if you think you know what the clip is, email us. Here's your clip.
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
Own or rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid. That's my job.
All right, we're back. Justin, real quick.
All right, apparently there's going to be another DC comic brought into television. This is going to be Constantine. People may remember the movie with Keanu Reeves. Get rid of that. The comic book character is much different. I don't know how well it's going to do on network television. I wish it was going to FX, but David Goyer is involved. I like the guy. I think he's quality. I have high hopes. We may see this character also in the upcoming Dark, Justice League Dark that Guillermo del Toro is working on. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice job. We gave him a limited amount of time because we're running long, so he wanted to make sure to let you guys know about that. So we'll see.
I had a gun to my head.
30 seconds.
We'll see how that was longer than my last child. All right, now let's go to DVD and Blu-ray, Scotty.
All right, real quick, this is for the releases of October 8th. First up is After Earth. It's actually After Earth, but we talked about it on episode 96 where Justin gave it a 5 out of 10, Aaron gave it a 550. Hangover Part 3, we talked about that one on episode 95. I gave it a 450, Aaron gave it a 4, and Justin gave it a 7.
I'd like to lower mine. I think I'm at about, 2.5 at this point. Yeah.
Much Ado About Nothing, which, correct me if I'm wrong, did any of us see that?
No, we haven't seen it yet.
Which surprises me.
It's on iTunes, too, and I definitely plan on getting it.
That's the Joss Whedon take on the Shakespeare work by the same name. Aaron did see The Purge, which he gave a 6 out of 10, and then Brian also saw Europa Report, which he gave a 5 out of 10. Also on DVD is Curse of Chucky, which none of us saw.
I will tell you, my brother saw this, and he said it is actually pretty good. So if you're a fan of the Chucky movies, Child's Play movies, he said if you're a fan of them, you will like it.
Now, did he say it's good for a Chucky movie, or is it good?
He said it was good for a Chucky movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Also, just a heads up, The Wolverine, which is going to be coming in the near future, is getting an uncut and unrated Blu-ray version. So this could be great if they're adding blood. Maybe we'd like to see that. Maybe get an R rating, that kind of thing.
That would be great.
That would be awesome.
Just a heads up, keep an eye out for that in
December.
The near future.
It's coming out in December.
And with that, we'll move on to our Recast in the Classics segment. This is where every other week or so, one of us gives to the other a classic film that we want to the other ho to recast with current actors. And this week it was Aaron's turn. And Justin tasked him with one of his favorites, which was Dead Poets Society. He was to cast John Keating, played by Robin Williams, Todd Anderson, played by Ethan Hawke, Mr. Perry, played by Kurtwood Smith, and Mr. Nolan, played by Norman Lloyd. Aaron, good luck, man.
All right. Well, this is one of your favorites, Justin, so I cast them all with Marvel actors.
So you made sure to shit it up.
Just
all
kidding.
Marvel actors.
All Marvel. Actually, I did have an all Marvel cast at one point, and I'm like, no, I'll be honest because you
mean like the Wolverine is Mr. Perry or something?
No, I had the whole thing, man. I'll tell you after the show. All right. For Mr. Nolan, who's what, the headmaster?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've changed it to an all-girls school. I want to go a different route. And you need somebody who's very strong, very...
Nice. An all-girls school. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Very mm-hmm. authoritative, but, you know, kind of a charming quality. And I went with Helen Mirren.
Nice. She
seems like the perfect headmistress.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Matron.
Maybe. Mr. Perry was played by Kurtwood Smith. And basically, you can describe him as an asshole. That's really who that character was. And who I wanted somebody who could play the asshole part, but also could bring a more even level of depth to it. I didn't think Kurtwood Smith had that depth. I thought he was just an asshole, really. And I went with Chiwetel Ejiofor. I hope I say that right. You remember him from Serenity?
Yeah, from Serenity.
Mm-hmm. He's also in a movie called 12 Years a Slave, coming out later this year. Just a phenomenal actor. And he's someone that's not too recognizable, because originally I wanted Hugh Jackman, and I said, I'll go a different route. I think he brings an element to it that I am not I would like to see in that kind of movie. Todd Anderson, obviously it's an all-girls school, so I'll change it to Terry Anderson is what I went with. And it was originally played by Ethan Hawke in the original movie, Painfully Shy, who breaks out of their show.
Captain, my captain.
Oh, Captain, my captain. I went with Haley Steinfeld, who was – people remember her. I think she is in the Romeo and Juliet movie, but people will remember –
she's playing Juliet.
Yeah, she's playing Juliet. But people will remember her most from True Grit. And she was the young girl in True Grit. She really is a phenomenal actress, but also not so well known that it would detract from the movie itself. Mm-hmm. So that to me was a perfect cast. Now for John Keating, that was really hard. The one I went with is going to be one of those. Well, of course, it's too easy. But honestly, it's one of those things where I thought it's too easy because it fits perfect. You need someone who's inspiring. You need someone who's charming. You need someone who's humorous, but also can pull off heart like
Dennis Quaid.
No, not Dennis Quaid.
Kurt Russell?
You need someone who can make these boys' lives extraordinary.
Girls.
And girls' lives. Sorry, I was going from the quote in the movie. But Robert Downey Jr. I couldn't think of a better choice to play that part.
That is good.
Good job.
So that's my perfect movie. Hey, I got an applause. Look at that.
You did so much better than I feared.
Now, do they have male teachers at all girls' schools?
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
I double checked on that. Believe it or not, I did double check that.
Scott's like, I might want to change my school.
Yeah, Scott's like, I'm transferring. I want to go somewhere else. Scotty, now you're going to get the next one in 2 weeks. Since it's October, I want you to recast one of my all-time favorite horror movies, which you finally just saw, and that's Jaws.
Oh.
So I want you to recast Chief Brody, who was originally played by Roy Scheider. Ellen Brody, who was played by Lorraine Gary, Hooper, Richard Dreyfuss, and of course Bruce the Shark. Now I want you to I want you to recast
the make one it an octopus.
Can I get the one from Finding Nemo?
Yeah, I want you to
fish
recast
your friends, not
I want you
food.
To recast also Quint, Robert Shaw. So
all right.
Good luck with that one. Come back in 2 weeks.
All right, that's going to be fun.
Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. It seems pretty apropos at this point, but with Breaking Bad taking over the internet this past week, and we're going to get to that show in just a little bit, what have we spent time investing in a series, and we expect that payout, but we haven't got it, or what do we expect when we finally get there? What do you expect when a show wraps up? Closure, ambiguity, what do you expect?
Well, it depends on the type of show and what the show has been giving me all along. If it's a show, it's like a procedural, and maybe they're following a long-lasting storyline, then I would like to see the resolution of that storyline. If it's a show that's more episodic, then I want to see something, you know, more about the characters and have their, you know, fates shown in a, you know, that they've earned. And if it's somewhere in the middle where it's been a lot about the character, but it's also been about a strong overarching story, then something that it, you know, that touches on both, gives closure to both, and that I can move away, you know, move on and feel like things have settled where they needed to settle. Mostly I want it to feel earned, and I want it to feel true to the story and to the characters.
Most series have some sort of a target or a goal. And there's, I mean, like Who Killed Rosie Larson, Lost, they trying to get off the island, I'm assuming was their main goal there. And to me, these kind of drive these characters' stories throughout the season. So that's at some point, let them get to that, you know, get to that point. And if you want to, if it's a great hit and you want to extend it out for another 3 years, find something else for them to do. Mm-hmm. But give me some kind of closure with that task.
I agree with Brian. I'm definitely all about the closure. I like a story wrapped up in a little bit of a bow. I'm okay with ambiguity to a degree, but not with major plot points or things that are very, very important to me that have been important to me throughout this season. The example, and I know this isn't a TV series, but the ending of a movie that I've talked about a lot liking was Inception. Mm-hmm. That had a little ambiguous ending at the end, and I liked that because that whole movie was making you think as it was, and I liked that.
But Zero Charisma kind of stole that ending.
Yeah, it did. A little bit.
Yep. But I like to see how the story plays out. I don't always want to have to interpret how I think it's going to happen or what's going to happen. I want to be told, You know, I want to know what the author was going through their head. They're telling me the story. Tell me the ending.
I don't need everything spelled out for me at all. I like to think for myself. But if your show poses a lot of mysteries or has a deep mythology like X-Files or Lost, then you damn sure better answer some of that stuff. Don't pose questions if you can't answer them. That's my number one thing. I think there's a lot of shows that you don't need that, so you can absolutely have whatever kind of ending you want. You know, when you've got shows like Newhart and Cheers, I mean, they nailed it. They were episodic television, but they had a real definitive ending that kind of gave you closure in all aspects. That's perfect for those kind of shows. And other shows like Lost or X-Files or mythology-heavy shows, just answer the main questions. You can leave ambiguity in terms of where the characters are going from here, but the questions you've asked to this point, you should answer. You absolutely should answer. That's my two cents.
Mm-hmm.
What pisses you off most when a show comes to an end, Scott?
Unanswered questions. Obviously, I just mentioned that, you know, especially when you're making a series that is centered around questions and then you don't answer them, that pisses me off. But even more than that is just out there plot points where they take just a weird turn just to be different for artistic sake, you know, just to, we're just going to do this just to mess with your head and not make any sense. So out there things.
I would agree with that. There is one in particular, and I know Scott hates this one, but Prison Break is a prime example of that.
Mm-hmm.
The out of left field ending where Michael Scofield, spoiler alert, dies. What the really? I mean, to that point, they had done everything else they could to give closure to the fans and finally give these people a happy ending. The only reason I can see for them to throw that in there was just to fuck with the audience heads. Mm-hmm. And I don't appreciate that. I thought that was kind of a cheap way to go out. You know what I mean? And I don't see any reason for a show to do that.
Yeah, there was the one example that that I remember the most, because I just remember it catching a whole lot of grief as a kid was Saint Elsewhere.
It just seemed like
it took just a lazy way out. Like, just screw
wasn't
it
all a dream or something?
Yeah, it was all like this autistic boy's dream. So, you know, awful. 6 years of whatever all that went on in St. Elsewhere was just this kid dreaming. And it just seemed lazy.
Isn't that what Newhart did though too?
No, but Newhart did it smart. Newhart had one of the smartest closing shots of any show I can think of, honestly. Basically he wakes up in his old show. I mean, it was really just a genius ending, I thought. Yes, kind of a slap, I guess, for your big, but it wasn't like a mythology heavy show or anything. I mean, it was a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they tied those two shows together, I thought was damn near genius.
Mm-hmm.
But other shows like X-Files, Lost, Moonlighting, when they got to the end, the writers seemed to have become lazy and they just slapped the audience in the face to a degree. And I know we can debate that, Justin, because I know you feel differently about Lost, but we'll get to the favorites and least favorites or whatever. But serialized shows, I think, have a harder time because they spend so much time asking questions. And I think sometimes the writers forget that they have to answer them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really don't like, is when a show that's been like that, very serialized, comes to an end, you have to answer those questions. You can't just, you know, come up with I don't want to answer it definitively, so therefore you come to your own conclusions. To me, most of the times, that sounds like lazy writing.
My least favorite endings are the ones that come without the writers and the people in charge of it knowing that it's coming. When they just end the show on an average everyday episode and then that's it. You know, you've spent several seasons with these shows and following along, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, the network decides to cut it and you don't even get an ending at all. It's just a normal episode. Nothing is resolved. No character arcs are closed. Even if it's an ending that I don't like, if it's an ending that at least the people behind the, you know, the scenes wrote and intended to be the ending, whether I liked it or not, at least they had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
When a show doesn't get a chance to end right, correctly, that pisses me off.
And it's an insult to your fans, to the fans that have been riding with you. Now, if you've got a show 3-4 years on the air and for whatever reason the ratings aren't there, we know what happens, right? I mean, we don't expect them to do bad business, but they should do something for shoot another 15, 20 minutes, half hour to cap onto the final episode or something to give that series closure. I mean, a lot of us buy the series on Blu-ray or DVD or whatever. We collect them. We want to revisit them at some point. I like some, to have an ending.
Some shows even finished out the season. They're like, hey, we've got all this done. We're going to finish it up even though we realize we're canceled. But they even finished up online.
Yeah.
One or two shows on even the major networks, they were, hey, we've got this. It's not doing well. We're going to drop it. But you can watch the rest of the season, you know, on our website.
Didn't that Daybreak or something do that?
Yeah, Daybreak did, I think. Yeah. And some people shoot like Leverage is a good example. That's a show that was very episodic and formulaic, but they didn't know if they were going to come back for another season. So they shot an ending that could either work as an end of season or an end of series. And it actually ended up being the great choice for an end of series. But they did that so that the fans wouldn't have to worry, you know, so that if the series didn't come back, there was a definitive ending. That's the problem with having cliffhangers on your series, is if your show gets canceled, nobody gets any kind of conclusion. I don't like that. So overall, what are your all-time least favorite ending to a series? What is the least favorite endings you've had to a series?
I'm glad I'm going first on this one because I'm a little bit nervous that Justin may have it on his list because it is sci-fi, and that's Quantum Leap.
I don't.
I used to love that show. And then the end of it, basically, you know, if you don't know, if you haven't seen it, Sam Beckett is a scientist. He's found out a way to leap back in time, but it's within his own lifespan. So he leaps into people in randomly, basically. And he has to complete a mission to kind of get out of that and be randomly pop into somebody else. And he keeps trying to get back to his time. And in the end of it, it's just basically, it's just some words on the screen that says, and he never made it back.
Yeah. I remember that. That was crap.
Yeah. Because there's so many of the episodes were so smart. And with a lot of the details and stuff, like, there was one episode where there's, you know, this little kid, you know, he sees him throughout this whole time. He's got these big funny glasses and.
Yeah, I remember this one.
Yeah. You know, and all of a sudden, like at the end of it, you realize I think it was Buddy Holly, and those little things I used to love about that show. And for it to kind of just end on this bad little, oh yeah, by the way, he never made it,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to me was lazy compared to all the great work they did before that.
My least favorite's pretty easy. X-Files. I don't even know if you could intentionally make a finale that bad, but it was absolutely awful. Chris Carter, shame on you. You should still be in hiding, which I think he is. Thankfully they made the I Want to Believe movie, which for me serves as a series ending. So, but that is the worst. I've never been so disappointed in a series ending in my life.
That movie, as good as it was, will never serve as an ending for that show, because we never got closure on the alien invasion. None of that got resolved. If Chris Carter were here, I would just slap him with the back of my hand like a bitch. Just pow.
All right. What are yours, Justin?
My least favorite ending is Alias. The entire run of that show. Oh, because the entire run of that show was all about historical person named Rimbaldi and all of these devices that he created and how he foresaw the future and how they had to capture these devices before whatever bad guy group that season was the big baddie got them. And at the very end of the movie we got no closure on Rimbaldi. We got no understanding of what his ultimate goals were. We didn't know nothing. It was a shit ending to a show that had been brilliant for its first at least three seasons,
mm-hmm.
and its fourth and fifth kind of waned a little bit, but I really wanted it to end strong. I wanted finally all of that Rimbaldi mythology to pay off, and it didn't. And I was gutted, really gutted. I could have said X-Files, but you already got it. I couldn't agree with you more. But for me, Alias, oh God, how could they end that show and not give me the closure I needed on all of that stuff?
Well, they did blow the dude up. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, but shit. I want Rimbaldi. That's who I really wanted, Rimbaldi.
What about you, Scotty?
Well, as you guys know, I didn't watch a whole lot of TV series. I watched.
You were in a closet most of your life.
I wasn't going there, but yes. I didn't really start watching series to their
to their completion until the past 5 or 6 years, or maybe even a little bit more. And the one that's disappointed me the most, and I know it's controversial, and I know we talk about it all the time, but I've never been more disappointed in a show than Lost, as far as an ending. A show that is based around mystery, to not answer the majority of those mysteries at the end was such a blow to me. And I should have known it going into the last two episodes that they're not going to answer any of these questions.
They ran out of time.
I mean, I like the show. I actually even liked the last couple seasons. I enjoyed them. I liked where the story was going. I personally felt completely let down by that ending because I was just like, that's it. There's nothing more. We're not going to get any, no little like internet thing I can go look at and search all this. I like the closure. I like the questions answered. And when you have a show that's based around questions and you don't answer most of them, that was a big disappointment for me.
And I will say, I don't want to go into a big Lost thing because we'll be here for 4 hours. But that is one of those finales that I'm still very conflicted on. As far as the characters go, love the ending. I actually loved everything about the character portion. It's the actual island mystery that is a big portion of the series itself that I thought was just lazy writing. Just lazy. I don't think it was, we're going to leave you with mystery. I just thought it was lazy. I thought they didn't know how to write themselves out of the corner they wrote themselves into. So I get where you're coming from. I get both people's arguments for that finale.
Right.
So what is your all-time favorite ending to a series?
All right. My favorite ending of all time is a TV episode called Sleeping in Light. When Babylon 5 first started, J. Michael Straczynski had a 5-year plan. But when he got to the fourth season, they told him, yeah, I'm sorry, we cannot do a fifth season. You're going to have to close it out this season. So what he'd planned to do over the course of 2 seasons, he now had to truncate into 1. TNT was interested in actually giving him a 5th season. And so what he did is he asked, can I please take Sleeping in Light, which is the season finale that I have, can I hold it to run at the end of the 5th season, and I will film you a new season ending for season 4, which they did, called Deconstruction of Falling Light. But then they held Sleeping in Light for the end. He got to do a 5th season, and even though it really wasn't all about what he wanted, because he'd already kind of done that in the 4th, that finale was so perfect. Every character got closure. The universe felt finished. The story arc was done, and it ended as well as any show can ever end. It's called Sleeping in Light, and that is exactly how that episode felt. It was magnificent.
All right, Scotty.
What? Honorable mention.
Well, you took 5 minutes for that one.
I'll be quick. Honorable mention, the end of Lost. Yes, for me, it worked. It worked like gangbusters. Were there mysteries unsolved? Yes. Am I wishing they would have solved them? Absolutely. There were plenty of questions that I would like to have gotten because I'm that type of guy. But as far as the characters went, I felt like the ending they got was just about perfect. And that was enough for me to feel like leaving the show and feeling good about leaving the show. Because even though the show was quite often about mysteries, every episode centered on a character. And for me, the characters were just as important as the mystery. To have them resolved made it okay. And I walked away from Lost with a happy grin on my face and just like, oh, that's it. And I actually teared up at the end because that ending shot will probably sit with me till the day I die.
Scotty.
And that's it.
Scotty.
Mine's quick and easy. I haven't watched a whole lot of shows. I watch more sitcoms than anything. And the ending of Friends. Make fun of me all you want, but that
You show... always start defending yourself. Nobody's making fun of you.
Yeah, we're not leaping at your throat. I don't know why.
I'm just expecting it.
Let us start railing on you before you hold up your hands.
I watched this show a lot with my wife as it aired, and we get the DVD sets. We used to watch them together while we were dating and after we were married. And the finale, this is the only show I've ever actually gone out to a place and watched it. It was like at a bar. Mm-hmm. They had it on a big screen. It was a big event. And
cheers.
Yeah. And sat and watched. It was like an hour episode. And it was so much fun to watch on the big screen with an entire room of people that were as into it as I was. And I have good memories with my wife on that. I love the ending. It ended in a very satisfying way. And that's a 10-year show.
They wrapped it up nice. They mm-hmm. they really did.
Mm-hmm. So,
and Brian,
I've always loved the ending to Cheers. I just thought that was that ended very poignantly. Just the way that a guy, this darkened character, walks up, knocks on the door, and he just says, "We're closed," and just kind of mills about for a minute, and then just kind of walks off, and then it ends in silence. You know, where they always had that piano music. Mm-hmm. That classic tune, and then that one ended silent. So, but really, I hate to say this. I don't know. Hate to say this, but it took me a while to come around to this way of thinking. But the way The Sopranos ended was very. I was upset at the first time I saw it, and then after watching it a couple more times, because it is a very ambiguous ending. You don't know what's going on. The last couple of minutes, this tension is mounting. Tony's daughter is, Tony and his family are at this diner. His daughter, you see her driving up. She's having a hard time parallel parking. You know, it's Journey's Don't Stop Believing starts kicking in, which I don't, odd music choice, but okay. It actually kind of works.
It's a good song though.
Mm-hmm. It is, you know, and this, the ending's coming, you know, something's about to happen. Tony's kind of checking out. There's this guy looks a little, you know, is he up to something? Is this guy up to something? You know, the guy walks by him. He gets, you know, kind of checks him out just as he's walking by, that kind of stuff. You know, his son shows up, blah, you know, and this tension just still keeps mounting. And then all of a sudden it just fades to black. And the music, you know, the music keeps playing and stuff. It for that story, that was a good ending.
Fair enough.
You know, for a mob boss, you almost expect him, well, he's got to die, you know, but it was a good ending.
My favorite is Angel.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's my absolute favorite ending.
Oh, it left it just so unfinished.
I disagree, man. I think they tied it up perfect. I think they tied up the loose ends. All the major plot points are resolved at the end.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
The group basically, the show ended the way that the show was. It was always, he was constantly fighting another battle. It was never going to stop for him.
That's true. So, all right. You've kind of convinced me.
So at the very, very end of the episode, after everything's been resolved, the crew, the group itself looks to be facing like certain death as they get ready to face this one more apocalypse. And the shot ends with Angel. All he says is, "Let's go to work." And you don't know if he's going to live, if he's going to die. You don't know anything. Everything is in your head. And that's how you do ambiguity right, as far as I'm concerned.
Lorne dying.
I don't care. It worked perfect for me.
Oh, it worked, but I was so gutted.
And my honorable mention.
Oh, wait, he didn't die. He killed somebody. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Cut me out.
And then he walked away.
Yeah, that's right.
But second place would be The Fugitive. The actual series of The Fugitive, when they finally resolved and he caught the one-armed man and... that whole series, which I love the series. If you ever want to, go back and check it out. It's a great series. But the way that they ended it and they showed that you can actually end a series like that and close everything out, resolve everything, and give somebody a happy ending. It's okay. You don't. Everything doesn't have to be a downer or by the numbers. I thought it was a great ending. And here's some of our listeners' favorite and least favorite series finales. D.A. Cheney, worst finale, Saving Grace. I never saw that show. And best finale, Spartacus. All right.
Never watched that, but I've always planned to.
Ed Wallach says one of the best will always be Newhart, with a twist back to his previous Bob Newhart show. Damn right it was. Worst, there are many because it's too easy to screw up and ruin others' expectations. Seinfeld, we forgot to mention that one, was a massive letdown because basically they capped out and did a one-hour clip show under the guise of a trial. Then there was the awful ending to St. Elsewhere. Love that show, and then they ruined it. I have not watched ER, House, Grey's Anatomy, Chicago Hope. All were ruined before conception by the abortion of an ending from St. Elsewhere. That's awesome. Jennifer Gibbons-Walling, the best, MASH. Justin Vaughn, Star Trek, TNG, All Things Good was great.
I could argue that, but we won't today.
Derek Morton, I love the 6 Feet Under ending. Fit the show to a T. Jessica Offenwanger, worst, Burn Notice. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't want to know. But
that sucks, because the first seasons I've seen have been good.
Yeah, it's a great show. So I've got it on DVR. I haven't watched it. And the best was Frasier. Nice choice. Edward Lorne, the best, Breaking Bad. I think it's too early personally for that one, but we'll
it's still good. We'll get to that.
And the worst, Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, fuck you, Ed. Fuck you, man. We will argue over that.
Reese Bennett. I have to say I was disappointed with Dexter, but still not sure if it was the worst. It might be close, though. Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel were satisfying, as well as Battlestar Galactica. Hey, you got there right
yeah,
after.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure a lot of people would say Lost was the worst finale, but really there was no way to end it that would have satisfied everyone.
Thank you.
And Josh Stima, the best was The Shield. That was the ultimate punishment for Vic. Totally agree. And the worst was Dinosaurs. That shit scarred me as a kid.
How did it end?
Okay.
Did he kill all of
it?
It
just, everybody, they were wiped out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. They did that on the show?
Yeah, it was pretty tragic.
No, but it was the guy, the father killed them all. Like, he poisoned the water or something.
Yeah, something like that. It was some evil sadistic. Google it, man. Yeah. Or go to YouTube. Find it.
Oh, I thought you meant like the asteroid
just
hit.
Find it. I can't even describe it. Find it.
Oh, my God. Puppets killing each other?
Yeah.
You know this. I mean, the sign should just about be. The guy's right. I mean, it should be almost labeled as the worst finale of any of them.
Clip show suck.
Because that there was over 76 million people watching that show.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that like a letdown like that is that's pretty epic.
That should be like a crime. I mean, actual jail time.
Yeah.
So let's go to closing Facebook. We always mention you. If you like us on Facebook, we'll mention you on next week's show. David Damani, Kevin Cole, and Marcus Shelton. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider page, guys. We appreciate that. And if you guys listening haven't done it, go like our page. We'll mention you next week. Now we're going to go to emails. Stephen Feldman sent us a message. Awesome. Also, thanks for the recommendation on Bridegroom. I'll have to keep my eye out for that one. I love a good documentary. We talked about that last week. So thanks a lot, man. Really, check it out. It's really worth the viewing. Brian?
Yeah, I got one from P.G. Holyfield. He actually made the connection that we did last week. He actually made it better than I did. So going from Hugh Jackman to The Wizard of Oz, he went from Judy Garland, who was with Mickey Rooney, the Mickey Rooney's with Robin Williams in Night at the Museum, and Robin Williams was with Hugh Jackman in Happy Feet. He says Mickey Rooney was the easy play, was trying to connect Ben Stiller to Hugh Jackman, and as in most cases with this type of game, animated movies are the way to go, and Robin Williams was the connector. So, but sadly, while I did it in less steps, I did not make the final connection until you had moved on to Prisoners. My prize is that Justin is a guest on my YouTube show Sunday. Way to cross-promote, by the way, dickhead. Now that I think about it, that's not a prize at all. This sucks. Smiley face. By the way, I saw Gravity last week at a pre-screening event. It was awesome in all caps, particularly the sound design, score, and cinematography. Let the Oscar buzz begin. Oh, by the way, the clip was Bad Boys 2. And again, that was PG Holyfield.
Thanks, PG.
Scotty?
All right, we got an email from John. He says, not going to lie, I feel honored to have been mentioned twice on one episode. As usual, it was another great episode, but I worry about how real some of the arguments get. Some tense shit. Hope all is well afterwards in Hoetown. Another part that I hope never stops are the references to Lost each episode.
Oh, you got plenty of this episode.
As a parent to my subject line, keep doing the good work, guys, and can't wait for the next episode. I think both sides had a valid point to the argument. I feel that if they brought Agent Coulson back just because he was loved by fans, it does indeed cheapen the death scene in Avengers. That being said, I wanted him back. I was shocked when they killed him in Avengers. That's the main reason I want to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because of Coulson. Also, from that little hint at what happened to him, it would suggest that he is indeed really dead, and this new Coulson is either a clone or android. I suppose time travel could be brought up, but he seems to be in on it for the most part with the whole now you're level 6 secrecy clearance thing.
Level seven.
Oh, sorry.
Now yeah, it's numbers. Yeah, I know you haven't really done anything with those since I don't know first grade.
Yeah. Now you're level 7 secrecy clearance thing. He knows something happened to him, just not the truth. I'm guessing an android seems more plausible. Either way, though, the original is dead, so the scene still holds some credit to his death, that Coulson is gone. That's John.
And Justin?
All right, well, first, John, those tense moments, yeah, they're real.
Oh, yeah, baby. It's all real.
But we always end the show with a little spoon and cuddle.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. All right, we've got to do what?
A little ball tickle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little slap and tickle. There you go. All right, we've got a tweet from D.A. Cheney. She says, hey, H_Outsider, Breaking Bad. It was a perfect ending. I'm open to see how it goes. For me, I definitely felt like Aaron did when the series was announced. While it doesn't lose the emotion, that, oh, I'm sorry, she went on to the Avengers. Mm-hmm. She didn't, I actually didn't see that. I'm open to see how it goes. For me, I definitely felt like Aaron did when the series was announced. While it doesn't lose the emotion that I had during Avengers, it tinges how I feel about Coulson now being alive. But the TV show may go in a direction where it'll feel like a moot issue at some point. Hashtag Coulson clones? Question mark.
A lot of people are thinking that it's going to be a clone, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm hoping Thor somehow gets involved with that, and maybe Asgardian technology or something.
There you go.
Maybe, yeah, maybe whenever him and Loki were handcuffed together before they went back, maybe Coulson's ashes were in that little box with the cube and stuff, and...
That would be kind of awesome.
Oh, Lord have
Dude,
mercy.
Dude, you are fucking blowing my mind.
All right. Make sure you stay after the credits. We are going to be talking about Breaking Bad. So I'm getting away from that crap.
Get Hollywood stat on the phone.
Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com or tweet us at @H_outsider, facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Leave us a message or text us at 818-814-6426. And our email, once again, feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through our RSS feed. I'm going to thank each one of you, Brian, Justin, and Scott, but we're going to keep moving because we got to get to Breaking Bad. So remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater...
Buy meth.
Buy Blue Rock candy. And popcorn. Or go to AMC because they're just giving it away.
Bitch.
All right, guys, Heisenberg is officially retired. And if you have not seen the ending or the finale, please do not listen anymore. We are talking Breaking Bad, and spoilers will ensue. Ready? That's your last warning. Heisenberg's dead.
Wow, I hope their fingers were quick enough to hit that.
I did it just like Chris Hardwick. If you watch Talking Bad, that's exactly what he did. He's like, hey, we don't want to. Yeah, he's dead. Jesse's free, and he's dead. He didn't even give you time to change the channel. That was pretty funny. So let's hit some of the big points. We've got about 15 minutes to go over this. I know, you know, we could talk about it for hours, but we don't have the time. So some of the big points in the episode, one of the first ones was Walt settles score with the gray matter. Did you guys see them revisiting that?
Yeah, no, I didn't really see that coming. But it's a par for the course. They really touched with a lot of even subtle plot points and items throughout the series. I like the fact that he kind of he revisited them. I mean, I don't know if he really got them back for anything, but I guess in a way he did, the way he basically forced them to handle his son's inheritance. But
I'm just glad he found a way to get the money to his kid. Finally, I mean, he did find a way to get the money to his kid. I guess nobody really cared about this story.
Apparently nobody gave a shit.
So. No,
I didn't see it coming. I was really happy to see that they went dip back in the well that far, because that was pretty early on.
I think it has been since the second season. I went back and looked. It was like the second season since we heard about them.
It makes me wonder, was he planning that since season two? Or
no.
Because that
he was not. Like... If you there's a little podcast called Breaking Bad Insider, I think is what it's called. And you actually hear Vince Gilligan actually goes through the episodes, you know, and explains his reasoning and stuff. They didn't even know they were going to come back to it until this season.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was kind of like a very recent thing.
It worked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool that they would go, you know, back into the well and pull out some characters that, you know, are pivotal for shaping who Walt was, but that we hadn't seen in a while. The fact that they actually survived and he didn't knock them off surprised the hell out of me. I'm glad they were able to take those characters, use them as a means of getting Walt Jr. and Holly the money that Walt wanted them to get, but still fucked with them with those lasers. I almost jumped out of my seat when those lasers popped onto their chests.
I knew it was something like, I knew it wasn't an actual, it weren't actual hitmen, But I had no idea it was going to be Badger and Skinny Pete.
Right.
I don't feel good about this, morally speaking, man. How you feeling now? Better.
Now, what about Lydia? We've got a couple things going, but what about Lydia? Everybody has been debating who the ricin was for, like, since he got it at the beginning of this current season. What did you guys think? Who did you think it was going to be for, Scott?
I figured it was going to be someone more prominent than Lydia. Lydia, to me, was always kind of a backseat character, but she was important to, you know, obviously getting the methylamine and that kind of thing. And it seemed like there could have been an easier way to take care of her than that, than going through all that trouble.
He couldn't find her. I mean, honestly, he kind of lucked out with her being stuck in routine and whatnot. I thought it was great because he had to take care of her because otherwise his family was in danger as long as she was alive.
Right, right. And it was just
was great how it played off of her character twerk. She went twerking.
I must have been getting something to drink. I didn't see her twerking too much
when she was dying. That part. Quirk of, you know, of being this kind of organic girl who, you know, can't get processed sugars, has to use stevia, and to have him use her own quirkiness against her to kill her. I thought that was really smartly done.
Yep.
I loved it. A lot of people were speculating it was going to be for Walt himself. That's what I thought it was for. Mm-hmm. Lydia's probably the one thing I didn't think about, and it played out perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Walt was the one person I think I, you know, probably ruled out. I just, if there's anything we've learned with Breaking Bad, just when you think you've got something figured out, it's not what you thought it was. So I knew, you know, that was the easy way to think about it. Well, okay, he'll lay in his house and, you know, take the ricin or whatever. Yeah, and I don't know. I don't really know. I never really kind of worried about it too much, though. So if I was going to pick somebody beforehand, it might have been Hank's wife or something like that. Mm-hmm. Where,
oh shit,
she just got so fucking annoying that, you know,
shit.
She did. Finally,
here, bitch, take it.
We all, wow, Brian. I think you might be more sadistic than they are. We did get one last scene with Skyler, which you kind of had to have, and I'm glad that he felt like he had to have that proper goodbye. So, Justin, did this scene move you? Was this what you wanted out of their final scene together? Did you want a little bit more? How did it play out for
you? Yeah, I mean, it wasn't nearly as much as I could have, that I wanted. I think that there was more to be said, but the fact that he finally admitted, you know, that this was about him and not the constant hiding behind his family all the time excuse for why he did what he did, but finally say, yeah, no, this was about me, this is about my need, and I was good at it. I think she could have got a little more, but then again, Skylar's just been this annoying character from the very beginning, so I'm not sure if I wanted to see her much more.
See, I don't get that, because I understand where she's coming from the entire time. I don't know why
she is, and she's true to the character, but I find that personality type annoying. She was far too laid back, and then when she finally found out what was going on, instead of, you know, calling the cops and getting this over with, she joined in with it. And then after that, she still wanted to act like she was the innocent person half the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was not one of my favorite characters.
And certain. Maybe, you know, she was a Patsy Cline fan or something, that, you know, standing by her man.
Wow, that was a long way to go, Chief.
I think the setup for that scene was really cool, too, because I didn't.
Oh, where he wasn't in the room and then the camera pans?
I didn't even consider the fact that he was in there, because normally when you see that, it's off to the side or they kind of pan the camera around. This is like the camera was moved forward to reveal that he was standing behind the pillar or whatever in the distance, and I thought that was awesome because I didn't even consider it. Even when they started moving the camera, until I actually saw him, I was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting camera shot, and boom,
nice
there he
is.
Nice
bit of direction there.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of that scene was when he finally does tell her, you know, she's like, I can't hear it one more time that you did it for the family. And he goes on to his diatribe about how I did it for me. I felt alive. That they didn't keep the camera on him. They kept the camera on her, which I thought was the best choice because you know, I already know he's a great actor. To see her reaction to that, where she finally gets to hear it, she finally gets to hear the truth out of him after all this hell that she's been through. I just thought, she deserved the Emmy for that. Just that one scene. I thought she was spot on perfect.
Agreed.
Yeah, that whole scene had just a lot of fantastic camera shots. I know it was actually, if you watch the Talking Dead after it, or the Talking Dead, Talking Bad after it, he actually admits that it was an accident. He didn't even realize it till post-production. But the during that scene where the camera's back a little bit and it is showing Walt, and you see, you don't see her face, you don't see her back is to you, but you see her face reflected in the oven or toaster or something like that. And you actually see, you know, you see her, and he was told, hey, that was a great shot. And he goes, well, that was, it was accident.
Yeah, so sometimes it happens. You know. Now we move on in the episode and we get to Jack's house where he, you know, the one thing which I found was interesting is Walt went there with the intention to kill Jesse. He did want to kill Jesse. He mounted this M60 in his car with his popped up garage door opener. Vince Gilligan has went on record as saying, yep, he absolutely, that was his intent, because some people were debating it. That was his intent. He went there to kill him.
Because he thought Jesse was still making his shit.
Yeah, he thought he was partnering up and basically using the Heisenberg name. When he found out what they were actually doing to him, his fatherly impulses and his actual concern for Jesse took over, and that's where he jumped on him and saved his life, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, basically this scene, Jesse's free, Jack's crew and Todd are all dead. How did this guy's play? Brian, did this work for you? Is this what you wanted?
I was very curious as to how this sickly guy was going to take out, I don't know what, eight or nine guys?
Quite a few,
with
yeah.
Guns. You know, so I like how they used all these foreshadowing or little hints from past seasons, with him at the diner, getting the gun out of the, you know, in the trunk of the car, that kind of stuff that at the time you weren't real sure what was going on with it. And honestly, I had forgotten about.
Yeah, me too.
And how they tied all that together. Brilliant, really. I just thought it was brilliant. I mean, my question is, you know, where's Jesse going? And is he going back to get his kid? Is he?
Well, no, he's going to go racing cars.
Yeah, he's going to drive straight into Need for Speed. That's what's going to happen.
That's how the opening scene is going to be on for that movie.
Oh, that would be the best.
That would be fucking awesome.
That would be great. That would
just
be
him screaming, you know, behind a steering wheel.
But some people were debating. Were you guys all happy that he lived, or was he one that you wanted to die?
Jesse?
Yeah.
Oh, I want him to live. Absolutely.
Does anybody disagree with that?
Yeah. No, I wanted him to live.
Yeah. I definitely think he did a lot of bad things too. I mean, he killed Gail needlessly. He did a lot of bad things, but he also paid a bigger price than almost everybody. I mean, he's been suffering for months as like a little caged animal. He's a zombie. I love the little...
His love gets shot in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, just everything bad happened to that kid. He never had a good chance. And I was so glad that he got to kill Todd.
Yep.
And some people are like, well, that was convenient. You know what? Fuck you. I like shit like that. And I'm glad that they said, here you go, fans. Here's one for you guys. This guy, this little prick has been annoying you for a while. We're going to give you one.
Yep.
And I did like the Jack scene, and I loved, finally, that money wasn't enough for Walt. You know, he's like, hey, if you kill me, you never find out where your money, bam, shoots him in the head. Didn't even care. Loved it. So one of the final questions is, Walt is dead. Now, a lot of people wanted him to live. A lot of people wanted him to die. Scott, where did you end up on this? Were you glad that they killed him off, or did you want him to go a different way?
Well, he's going
to
die anyway. He's either going to die from this or he's going to die of cancer. He wasn't going to be around for long. And I thought the way that they ended it with him that way was beautiful. Amongst the cooking materials and that kind of thing, he's got his hand and the blood stain on one of the kettles.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. But there was nothing more that could be done. He said in one of the previous episodes, I still have a few things I have left to do, and he finished them all in this episode. He did everything he needed to. It's done.
Brian, what did you think?
The part of me that likes the character, I wanted to live, but basically he had to die. I mean, it's whether it was cancer or bullets, whatever the case was, for the story, it just made sense for him to die. I like how they did it. I like how, like I say, he tied up all his loose ends, said his goodbyes, took care of Jesse, you know, took out the guys that did him wrong, and he spent his last few minutes happy looking at his baby, you know, his lab. His that design. Was right. That was his work, even though that wasn't actually his lab. That was set up that way because of him. And you could kind of see him, you know, maybe reminiscing with some of the items like the mask and the kettles and stuff. And that was just, hey, this is, like I say, this is when I felt my most alive. And then he just, you know, and he went out. I thought it was a good way of him going out.
And Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I really couldn't agree more. I think there's an argument that could be made that it wrapped up a little too nicely. Yeah. But they didn't want people to feel like there was anything left that was really, truly unresolved. So having him die amongst really what had become his love, that lab equipment, he died kind of, you know, saving a person that he felt close to, knowing his money was going to his family, that the sister-in-law was going to get her husband's remains back, and that everybody who had fucked him over got their comeuppance, was a nicely made bow. And I am really thrilled with the show in all, especially the way it ended.
So overall, now that it's all done, where does the finale and the series itself rate for you as a whole, Justin? Just like you were alluding to, where do they both rate for you?
Oh, I mean, it's up there in the top echelon. If I had to make a list of my favorite series of all time, it would most definitely be in the top five. Right. It was strong from beginning to end, never flinching. Very few shows can say that.
I totally agree. It was one of those things where, you know, I came into the game late, and I intentionally waited. These guys have been talking
very late.
These guys have been talking about
you were
it.
Racing for this finale.
These guys have been talking about it for a couple of years. My brother was the first one to ever mention it. He's been a fan since day one, and he tried to get me into it. And I'm like, man, I will catch up. Then you guys were raving about it, and I'm like, well, I know it's coming to an end. I'll wait until right before the series, the final eight episodes comes in, and then I'll catch up, which I did. And I'm glad I did it that way, because I would be on pins and needles for a couple of years.
That was just exactly what I was about to say, is I'm almost jealous of you from that aspect. I wish I wouldn't have known and then just caught up the last, you know, few weeks before the just because it sucks when it's that good and then you got to wait another week or yep. the end of the season. And now you got to wait 6 months or whatever it is.
And I'll be honest, if it wasn't for that, I don't know if I would have endured it, because that first season wasn't as compelling as like the second and the third. Like the first seven episodes are good, but really the series started to hit. It almost seems like the first season was all set up. Does that make sense? And it really felt like it started to find its footing in the second season, and the third was phenomenal, fourth was phenomenal, and the fifth has just been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, that bloody bathtub in the second episode.
Yeah, that was
pretty strong.
That was pretty strong. But overall, as a series, I would definitely put it in my top 10. I was just, and probably my top five, because of the fact that it stayed strong throughout. It started strong, it finished strong, it gave me resolution. It didn't give a bunch of things up in the air, except good things. You know, the only thing it really didn't resolve is what's going to happen to his family now. But I don't really know if you ever could, unless you did a flash forward or something, which I don't want. Some things I think are better left. You have to just picture it. I mean, you kind of get the idea. They're going to get the money. Skylar may or may not be okay. I'm glad they didn't go. Vince Gilligan alluded to in that podcast I was talking about, too. Originally, they were going to have Skylar kill herself in the final episode.
Which my God.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah,
that would have been awful. You don't leave your infant child like that. Nah.
I think that's why they went there. But that would have been shocking. You would have been,
But sometimes just being shocking isn't enough.
I agree. And I think he finally saw a reason in that and he went this route.
She could have killed her sister. That I would have kind of got behind. Shot her with a purple bullet.
Yeah, she was very consistently annoying.
And what about you, Brian? Where do you rate the series and the finale itself?
Yeah, I don't have it's to me. I just my knee jerk reaction is just top five. If I had to sit here and figure out exactly what my top five would be, that take a little too much time. But it's definitely in the upper echelon, and that's just not even a. Well, it's fresher in my mind. It's not, it's, you know, it's the passion for it is up a little bit more right now than maybe some of the others. But for me, it's just, it's well written. Again, I've said it 100 times before, but the opening shots for the pilot episode, I've never been hooked by anything else as much as I was. I mean, you start out with a middle-aged guy in his underwear driving an RV through the desert wearing a gas mask. You do not get any more compelling than that. You have to figure out, you have to sit there and watch it and go, what is going on and what's going to happen next? And from that moment, I've been hooked. I've said it, plenty of times already, but it's stayed consistent and, consistent good. There's never been a season where it felt like, well, this is kind of dipped down a little. It's a little boring. Maybe they're relying too much on story and dialogue, maybe not enough action. It's been a perfect balance. Very smart. It's definitely, again, for me, definitely top five.
Scotty?
For me, it's a top three. But again, I don't watch as many series as you guys do. I've never finished a series and watched it and had the emotional feeling that I had after watching the finale of Breaking Bad. It was a mixture of bummed that it was over, but also satisfaction that it ended in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was sad, but it was almost a happy ending.
Yeah, pretty much. And what you were talking about, the consistency of it being from start to end, strong throughout. I can think of one episode that would be what I would consider filler. Mm-hmm. It was a fly episode, which felt just a little.
I actually love that episode, but I get what you're saying.
I like the episode, but there was, that was the only time I felt like, okay, this is a little weird. But usually, you have all kinds of that to fill it out and make the episode last longer to get more ratings and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. This was the perfect length. They quit while they were ahead, and the ending was so satisfying for me, and I really latched onto the characters, and it wasn't just a happy show.
No, there wasn't much joy. You know what I mean?
There's not at all. It ended on somewhat of a downer note that was still satisfying. And for a show to do that, to end it with the main character dying and still make you feel kind of like, okay, that's how it should have ended,
mm-hmm.
was really, really good.
And I want to mention one thing before we wrap up, because we do got to wrap up. But the fact that, and I said this to you guys plenty, which is I could not feel for Walt anymore. I was done. As far as I'm concerned, he's reprehensible. He's a douchebag. There's nothing good about him. And that last episode, they reminded me of who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give Cranston credit. I mean, everybody in the world gives him credit. But the fact that he could pull that off after I hated that fucking character is phenomenal. And he deserves the Emmy just for that. Because in that final episode, after all the horrible things he's done this season alone, I actually felt bad for him.
And then one other thing that I wanted to say real quick was, it takes a lot for me to want to rewatch a series that's based on one long continuing story. I don't have a whole lot of time. And when I saw that ad for the Breaking Bad box set in the mm-hmm. barrel,
I've already purchased.
Oh my god.
My pre-order is locked.
I want to go back and start from the beginning. And now that I've watched the finale, because I started watching the series in about season 2 or season 3 mm-hmm. when I started getting caught up, so I got to watch some of it up to speed. And I can't wait to go back and see the beginnings and try to pick up on the little things like we talk about doing with Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? The little things that you miss and that kind of thing. So.
I just really hope people check out the series if they haven't before, mm-hmm. which I doubt if they're listening to this, they haven't. But
it's only 5 seasons. I mean,
it's the right length. And the first season's only like 7.
They're short seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, they did a lot of that splitting stuff too, so that's why it kind of felt longer. And I think the first season is only 6 episodes, right?
Yeah, 7 episodes.
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah. So even that one's really a half season.
So anything in closing you guys want to say?
Vince Gilligan, I do not, I would not want to be in your shoes right now trying to come up with a new show.
Yeah.
You have set a high bar for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be missed. But again, I think we've got enough closure with it that I don't need any more. I don't want a Saul spinoff. I don't want any more properties to do with this at all. With this, everything is clean. It's tidied up. I don't want prequels. I don't want sequels.
I'm starting to feel that way with you, Brian. Honestly, I was all on board with this whole idea, and I'm kind of just leave it.
Yeah, I like it the way it is. Just it's packaged perfectly. Leave it there.
You know what they need to put on the box set? On the just a little tag at the end of the final episode, Huel going, hello? Y'all let me out?
I'm just scared like that would end up being the equivalent of, you know, that Saul show to Breaking Bad as Joey to Friends.
Yeah, I could see what you're saying.
Ooh,
now you really soured me. So thanks again to AMC for putting on a great show. It was a great series, great finale. We all loved it. Thanks for letting Heisenberg knock.